From KTOO, I'm Katie Anastas with a look at local and statewide news. Five environmental and tribal organizations have signed their support onto a lawsuit against federal fisheries managers. The suit alleges that the National Marine Fisheries Service has violated environmental policies by using outdated data to guide the way it regulates the trawling industry in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Chain fisheries. This includes the Alaska pollock fishery, responsible for the vast majority of salmon bycatch in the region. Lorelei Ivanoff is the executive director of Native Peoples Action, one of the supporting organizations. She says trawling management decisions are based largely on environmental analyses nearly two decades old.
There are so many factors as to why salmon declines are where they're at right now in our rivers. We know it's not just the pollock industry. However, if the analysis and if the environmental impact statement that they use for analysis and for decision-making was updated, there would be a more complete picture of what's happening in the ocean to base their decisions on.
The lawsuit was originally brought in April by the Association of Village Council Presidents and Tanana Chiefs Conference, tribal organizations that together represent the vast majority of communities hit hardest by salmon crashes in western Alaska. Earlier this month, five Alaska Native and Fisheries Conservation organizations filed what's known as an amicus brief on the same side as the original two plaintiffs. It's a way for those with a stake in the outcome of a lawsuit to offer additional information that courts may consider before ruling. Becca Robbins-Justclair is Arctic Programs Director for Ocean Conservancy, another supporting organization. She says the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, the body that sets federal fishery management standards, needs to make a change to protect Western Alaska salmon runs.
Literally, as we speak, the council this week is about to make these same decisions again about setting catch limits for billions of pounds of groundfish to be removed from the Bering Sea, and they're doing it again without fully considering the impacts on the ecosystem, on subsistence fishing, on indigenous ways of life.
Earlier this year, the city of Bethel joined the lawsuit as an intervener, essentially a latecomer plaintiff. The city cited the cultural, nutritional, and economic importance of salmon to Bethel residents in their move to join the lawsuit. On the other side of the suit, the At Sea Processors Association and United Catcher Boats have become interveners in support of the National Marine Fisheries Service and maintaining the status quo. Both are trade associations representing the trawling industry. United Catcher Boats did not respond to requests for comment on Thursday. Both the At Sea Processors Association and the National Marine Fisheries Service say they're unable to comment. Ketchikan residents will no longer have access to cable television starting next fall. Ketchikan Public Utilities, the island's last provider, announced it would be sunsetting cable services next year. KPU says subscribers have gone down and operation costs have gone up as people nationwide turn away from local TV and towards streaming services. KRBD's Jack Darrell reports.
It's a commercial longtime Ketchikan residents might recognize.
Are you sitting at home wondering exactly how windy it is? Only KPU has the only truly local weather node located right here in Bar.
The commercial is from 2010. KPU TV's Michelle O'Brien is standing on a beach in jeans and a windbreaker. Snow is flying past her sideways. The video quality seems grainy for something made just over a decade ago. But soon, cable commercials like this one are going to be even more of a relic in Ketchikan. By September of 2024, cable cords in every household will be cut. KPU Telecommunications announced on December 4th that they can no longer compete with providers offering video streaming services. Dan Lindgren is KPU Telecommunications manager.
You know, when you have large companies, you know, Hulu, you know, Netflix, YouTube TV, I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. They're all trying to increase their market share and just disrupting the whole marketplace. But this transition's been in play for, 10 years, and it's kind of just accelerated in the last five.
Lindgren has a cable box in his home. When asked if he's going to miss it, he doesn't get sentimental.
No. I'm ready to completely transition for sure.
There are many who aren't, though. Lindgren estimates currently about 20% of KPU customers are cable subscribers. He says he recognizes that this transition won't be easy for some, specifically the older demographic that may not be used to smart TVs and the overwhelming amount of streaming options available. Lindgren says they won't be left behind in the transition, though.
You know, we will really have a focused effort on making sure that we support them, do everything we can to make sure that they, you know, have their video entertainment needs fulfilled.
For Lindgren and KPU, it's not just that less people are tuning in to cable TV, but that it's getting more expensive to offer.
You know, we just got to the point where, you know, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
People who watch KPU cable do so on set-top boxes. Lindgren says that equipment is becoming obsolete faster and faster, and they can't replace every box on the island. This is in addition to more costly content and licensing fees. GCI, the other cable provider in Ketchikan, suspended service a couple years ago. Ketchikan's was the first cable system in the state. In October of 1953, cable television debuted in the Elks Club and a few bars around town. Anchorage got cable a couple months later. KPU-TV didn't come along until 2005, though, according to Lindgren. When they did, they offered local programming, like the show
Live in Ketchikan is the only show of its kind dedicated to our town. This is the television show that spotlights all that happens in and around Ketchikan. Live in Ketchikan is your resource.
So tell me what's going on here, because everyone knows the tank, and you're, it looks like you're doing...
This is from an episode in 2013. The host is getting a tour of an armored personnel tank owned by future borough mayor Rodney Dial. Local cable-based shows like this one are now a thing of the past. In a press release, KPU assured customers that it will still produce local content, such as high school sports, arts, cultural events, and other community-focused video content. It'll just be streamed exclusively on internet and mobile apps. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
What began as a tiny garden bed on the front lawn has blossomed into a full-fledged farm-to-table program for Sitka's alternative high school. Pacific High in Sitka this year opened an 1,100-square-foot greenhouse on school grounds, supplemented by an extensive outdoor garden. Principal Mandy Summer outlined the program for the Sitka School Board on Wednesday. She says it's not just about growing plants.
So the purpose of our program is really to build career, technical, and general skills in youth that they will need to thrive in the future. We have classes and activities that are 100% based in our farm-to-table program, and these include our spring gardening, our garden construction classes, our culinary classes that happen all year long, and our school-wide stewardship days.
Pacific High has a small student population relative to the other high schools in Sitka. When the first garden plot was built in 2011, there was only one class associated with it, called Reading and Weeding. Now there are tie-ins to classes in all academic areas, and a grant-funded garden coordinator, Andrea Frega, who corrals over 40 volunteers in summertime to support student gardeners. And Mandy Summer says that at Pacific High, all the students are gardeners.
When we have garden stewardship days, even our most disengaged students inside the building and inside the classroom are very engaged outside in the garden. The work is supporting their confidence and their pride, supporting their development of a good work ethic. And the kitchen and garden spaces also allow us to make connections with traditional foods for our majority indigenous student body.
Pacific High's farm-to-table program receives significant support from the Sitka Conservation Society, which at first served as administrator for the garden coordinator job, but has since spearheaded raising over $150,000 to construct the greenhouse. Gardening might not be at the top of the list of many conservation organizations, but the Society's Chandler O'Connell says the program is in the SCS wheelhouse.
We strongly believe in youth development as an essential pathway for building sustainable, thriving communities. The youth in Southeast are so amazing, and they often have so many incredible opportunities thanks to the environment and communities and cultures that hold them and surround them. And they also face really significant challenges, as you all know, people experiencing poverty, violence, trauma, struggling with mental health challenges.
Although the structure is complete, there's still much to do to make the new greenhouse fully functional. Principal Summer says there are outstanding grant applications for funding to supply utilities to the building and for other equipment to heat the garden beds in winter. The Sitka School Board was impressed with the program. Member Steve Morse said the district owed a big thank you to the Conservation Society for their work to build the program. Chandler O'Connell responded that the students are building this program themselves right now, and that's been going on for 12 years. And that's really where the success lies.